But now to the issue of fatal fetal abnormalities. Some weeks ago, we spoke to a man called Ricky, who had just discovered that the child his partner Niamh was carrying had a fatal fetal abnormality. The couple were about to travel to the UK to terminate the pregnancy. He described the position that they'd found themselves in.
We went into the hospital and they told us that, you know, the first person done a scan and they had concerns, and it went up to a second person. Then ultimately it went up to a senior doctor, and basically they said that there was a severe form of type of spina bifida, in a sense. I know there's a particular name to it, where the head doesn't form over the brain properly, and the brain is actually exposed to the fluids in the womb.
And Ricky, what was your reaction?
Oh, we were utterly shocked, completely shocked. You know, we were looking forward to everything, and it was our first scan, and then to be told, and the doctor looked at us and just said, "I'm so sorry."
Were you definitively told that your baby would not be able to survive outside the womb?
100%, the baby will not survive, and we would be lucky if the baby survived throughout the pregnancy.
So what did you think to do at that point?
At that point, we didn't know what to do. It was on the drive home. We just started talking about it. And ultimately, we came to the decision that for Niamh's well-being, mentally, having to carry on with the pregnancy, and for the baby, we felt we had to terminate.
Explain that to me. Why did you feel for the baby it was the best thing?
Because on an ongoing basis, the baby is affected. The fluid is touching its brain, and ultimately, you know, there was no chance of survival. So, you know, we felt it was the best decision.
Well, that was Ricky describing the situation that he and his partner Niamh found themselves in just about 4 weeks ago now. And pressure has been mounting on the government to legislate for the situation. Later in the programme, we will be talking to a woman representing the views of One Day More, and who herself opted to continue her pregnancy after she was told that the child she was carrying had a significant disability. But after speaking to Ricky, we wanted to find out just how many Irish people find themselves in this position, being told that the fetus they are carrying will not live, and then having to decide whether to continue with the pregnancy to term or to travel to the UK in order to terminate. I'm joined now on the line by the master of the Rotunda, Sam Coulter-Smith, and here in studio by Jane Dalrymple, a midwife who works exclusively in this area. Sam Coulter-Smith, I might go to you first of all. Can you tell me, with the advances in medicine and in fetal screening, you know, how much more common is this situation for people to find themselves in?
Morning, Keelan. I think it's significantly more common than it was in the past. First of all, we're an awful lot busier in Ireland in the maternity services. The numbers of babies being born in the country has dramatically increased over the last 10 years. So the demand for services has hugely increased. And then I suppose as technology has improved over the last 15, 20 years, the amount of screening that's done has also increased. So there's a huge demand now for both first trimester and second trimester screening. And what that does is it has identified more people with issues that then need to be resolved. So it's a huge challenge for the maternity services to deal with that issue.
And Sam, can I ask you, I mean, is this screening given routinely to women, or do they have to ask for it?
I suppose there's a variety of different types of screening that are performed in Ireland. Every patient has a booking antenatal visit, and that antenatal visit that booking is designed to first of all identify the number of babies, to identify whether the dates are correct, and then in some instances it will pick up very significant abnormalities, and in some it won't. But it's not a particularly designed as an anomaly screening scan. Then there are women who will opt into first trimester screening, which is specifically to look for chromosomal abnormalities, and that's done generally between 12 and about 14 weeks. And then following on from that, most fetal medicine units now provide a 20-week anatomy scan. That's an anatomy screening scan, and that will pick up structural abnormalities.
Right. And Sam, can I ask you, in terms of that earlier scan and picking up abnormalities when women haven't necessarily asked for it, has the technology improved so that you are picking those up more frequently now?
Oh yeah, the imaging technology has improved. The image quality has improved. The standard of and the quality of the people doing the screening has significantly improved. The problem, I think, is that it's probably better developed in the bigger hospitals. Some of the smaller hospitals around the country wouldn't have access to the same level of expertise within the subspecialty of fetal medicine that you would have in the major centres. So that's an issue of inequity within the service that I think needs to be addressed.
And I suppose then the key question is, once you do diagnose a significant fetal abnormality or indeed a fatal fetal abnormality, what happens to that person? What happens to the mother at that point?
Well, obviously, it's a huge event for the mother, for the couple, for the family. It's a major blow to them. These pregnancies are wanted and loved, and it's a desperately sad situation and very difficult for the couple. So our job is to try and support the couple in their choices around what they plan to do. It's very important that our job is not to judge. We're not here to decide what should happen, but we're here to try and support them in any choice that they might make. And I suppose that's where people like Jane come in, because Jane, with her colleagues, provide an absolutely incredibly good resource to these families. They support them in the choices that they make. And obviously, some women will choose to maintain the pregnancy and carry on, and need to be supported throughout their pregnancy. That's really important. And some women will choose not to proceed with the pregnancy. And our job is to support people in that choice. But the law as it stands, there's an issue in relation to the amount of support that we can provide for those people. But it's really important that our job is not to judge these situations. It's to support people in the choices that they make.
Jane, can I bring you in here? I mean, you will be the person to whom the women are referred, the families are referred when they get this quite devastating news. What happens then at that initial meeting? I mean, usually these people have come in for a routine scan. They're excited about seeing the baby. They get this devastating news. What services can you offer them, or how can you help them?
Well, Keelan, it's very important to remember that while most babies, most women give birth to normal, healthy babies, about 2-3% of babies will have a major birth defect. And these are, in fact, the ladies who will be referred to our unit.
2-3%, it's significant, really.
It is significant.
How many women would you deal with on an annual basis in your department?
Well, in 2013, I had 470 plus referrals through the fetal medicine unit.
470. That's 470 people who had been diagnosed with a fatal or a very significant fetal abnormality.
Fetal anomaly, not necessarily fatal, but fetal anomaly in general. But what's extremely important is that when an abnormality is diagnosed, it is absolutely critical that the parents have access to expert counselling, detailed information and support, and that they can make a decision that will optimise their pregnancy outcome. So when there is a suspicion of an abnormality and somebody's referred into my unit, it is my job to introduce myself with my expertise, take a basic history on what they already understand as to what might be wrong with their baby. They are already devastated and shocked. You know, the abnormal is lost. We need to establish. They then are referred into the fetal medicine consultant. And at this stage, there is a detailed anatomy scan, and any more details that can be found about the condition.
You do everything you can to confirm the diagnosis.
Absolutely.
At that point and see just how serious it is.
Yes, and that may or may not include an invasive diagnostic procedure to look at the chromosome count or the genetics of this baby.
A CVS, is it?
A CVS or an amniocentesis.
And Jane, I mean, of those over 400 women, generally speaking, if a woman gets a fatal fetal abnormality, I mean, obviously some will choose to continue the pregnancies, some choose to terminate. Can you give me any indication of what the ratio is there? Is it half and half? Is it, how many choose to terminate at that point?
It's very, very individual, and it's multifactorial, because the decisions that couples come to depend on so many different things. There's no doubt about it that with, as Sam has said, with the introduction of these extremely good non-invasive risk assessments for annual aneuploidy early in pregnancy, that women are getting a diagnosis of fetal fatal abnormality very early in pregnancy. So the trend really, since that has become the reality of what we do, the trend is possibly that many more women terminate a pregnancy early than they would have 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
They get the news at 12, 13 weeks, yes, when it's easier, I suppose, to go to.
Well, it's never easy, but I suppose if you continue a pregnancy from early gestation, knowing that the baby may survive the pregnancy, but the likelihood is will pass away very shortly after birth, then I look after many, many women who make that decision, and I absolutely support them. What I now have to do is tailor their antenatal care completely to a different journey that they expect to be on.
And is that easy to do within the confines of a very, very busy maternity setting?
Well, the very fact that I have a special role means that, and I don't do this solo, I absolutely have an amazing multidisciplinary team behind me. So all of these couples have their care tailored to their specific needs. We take these couples on a journey, perhaps maybe from diagnosis to graveside. And for all of the other people that will help them on this journey, and it's a grief journey, that I would be the multidisciplinary sort of key link for everybody else.
And Jane, can I ask you about your patients who choose to terminate? I mean, I suppose there's a very, very big difference between deciding to terminate a pregnancy when it is a wanted pregnancy and you've had this awful news about the child not being well.
It's very well reported in the literature that the psychological consequences for termination for fetal abnormality are absolutely enormous, and they're totally separate from people who have a social termination. These are very much wanted babies, and these are couples that probably sit opposite me never think they would ever, ever have to consider this option. And nobody makes a decision like this lightly. It takes expert counselling with them, and it takes them time to assimilate the information and to make an appropriate choice for them.
But currently these people still have to leave your care and the hospital's care in order to terminate the pregnancy. Do you think the legislation needs to change?
Well, I think that people are entitled to make choice. I think it's very unfortunate that in an awful situation that you add in the difficulty then with having to travel to another jurisdiction to meet a new team, perhaps to end up in a unit that don't completely support the grief journey as I've described. We would certainly recommend that if these women are considering this option, that they would be cared for in a fetal medicine unit in a jurisdiction where it is legal, because that's a situation where they will be supported with sensitivity and care. They will also meet a bereavement team. These are couples that may feel that they've had to leave their baby in another country and that they don't have a recognition for the baby that they had.
Certainly speaking to Ricky, himself and his partner were on their way to an abortion clinic, which, well, they didn't have the money to pay for the abortion in the first case and had no way of bringing the baby's remains home with them. Is this something you would deal with?
This is extremely important to the couples that I look after, and that is why we feel that they should be seen in a fetal medicine unit. Until the legislation...
They should be seen here in Ireland, if they're with an Irish team, they should be allowed to terminate their pregnancies here from a medical point of view.
They need to be seen in a fetal medicine unit, whether that's in Ireland or somewhere else. It's the right type of care. Will it ever happen in Ireland? I'd like to think it would. Termination, as we've already mentioned, for these reasons, is not something that people enter into lightly. It's very difficult to add, you know, travelling and expense into the equation.
And Sam Coulter-Smith, to bring you back in, I mean, from a medical point of view, is it best practice, do you believe, that when a family or a couple or a woman gets this diagnosis, that she leaves the jurisdiction?
I think if, you know, in an ideal world, you would want to have continuity of care. You'd want to have the relationships and the support network that have been built up. You know, once the diagnosis has been made, you'd want that continuity there to support people. I think it doesn't do any favours to anybody to have those women transferring to a different jurisdiction, to a system that they don't know, to people that don't know them, providing care in this sort of very stressful situation. So I think it is very, very difficult for people in this situation.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to leave it there for now. Jane Dalrymple and Sam Coulter-Smith, thank you both very much indeed for joining us this morning. And we will be speaking to Jennifer Keogh from One Day More very shortly.
Tweet at Today SOR.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Well, I'm joined now by Jennifer Keogh, who represents One Day More and who herself was the mother of a baby diagnosed with serious fetal abnormalities. Jennifer, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning. Briefly, can you tell me your own story? What happened?
Okay. Well, it's 4 years ago now, just a bit over 4 years ago, we went in for our routine scan with our youngest little girl. And it seems so frivolous now, but I was more interested was the baby boy or girl, because we already had four girls and one boy. So I was really interested in that. But so during the scan, as you can just imagine, things went quiet and it was quite obvious, say, they weren't seeing everything they'd hoped to see. And this is something that nobody has ever prepared for.
No, nobody thinks about it.
Nobody ever thinks. It's like any kind of disaster. Nobody ever thinks it's going to happen to them. It happens to kind of, hypothetical people, somebody else, So so basically what they spotted was that the baby had a major brain abnormality, a huge cyst at the back of her brain, and bits seemed to be kind of not properly developed. And then on top of that, then she also had a major heart defect. So we were transferred then to another doctor, and they repeated the scan on a different machine, just in case it was the machine that was wrong, but obviously not. And at this stage, I was kind of shaking, one day, just in complete shock.
Devastating news.
You kind of even go into a kind of an automatic, it's like you're kind of a dream that this is happening to somebody else, And so the doctor just put down the thing and turned to us and said, well, most people will go to England. A full stop. Mm. That was it.
And what was your reaction to that?
Well, I was just... At this stage, I was already in shock, you see. So it didn't really kind of register. I thought that it was kind of a very strange thing to say. It wasn't sympathetic or it wasn't it was just most people go to England. And it was very obvious what the implication was, but there was no other anything else, offered. So we just said, luckily actually that my husband had come with me that day, and being the sixth baby, most of the other babies I just said, no, don't bother, just queuing up here.
You're well used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I suppose what you're pointing out there is a failure in the care services, that you weren't handled properly when you were given the devastating news. I mean, I suppose in fairness, we did hear the Master of the Rotunda say that services are not uniform throughout the country.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be, from the experience of our mothers in Monday Moor and the different families, it seems to be very much a hit or miss, who's there that day or who... But basically that day we were offered no support of any description. In fact, I was handed a card for a bereavement counsellor, and we had a test then to check the chromosomes to see was it the doctor said, this is probably a condition that is fatal, and when there's two things wrong, quite often other things can be wrong. It's often an indication of a syndrome of some sort,
But it wasn't. You did not get a fatal fetal diagnosis. You weren't told that your child would die.
We didn't get the diagnosis until a good few weeks later. And the thing about the diagnosis, if we didn't get a diagnosis that day, there was two doctors there, they said they didn't know what was wrong. They didn't know what it was. Mm. It turns out it's actually quite a rare condition. And and we were in such fright, and I remember we just said, no, we're not going to go to England. So we got this test to see about the chromosomes to see was it rule out things,
one of the syndromes,
exactly. And but I remember on the way home that day, it was a really horrible, really rainy November, and I also remember the fellas selling the newspapers at the lights of the Santa hats. It just seemed our world had just. It was like being in a kind of a horror movie or kind of a dreamlike kind of horror. Really, you can't even imagine what it's like. It's just a really devastating thing to hear about your child, and.
Truly shocking.
Yeah. Oh, very, very
shocking.
But
I suppose your basic thesis would be that we need to provide services for women like you. And clearly Jane from the Rotunda is trying her very best to provide those good quality services for women who continue with their pregnancies. Yeah. But in your case, they were lacking.
And in fact, actually, for the rest of the pregnancy, I'd say we were treated with no kindness at all.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there was no... the one thing that I...
And I would point out, you were not with the Rotunda. You're not naming the hospital
No,
you were
not
with.
No, it wasn't the Rotunda.
Yeah.
for the entire pregnancy, and I was very hyper-tuned into this, because and it really actually became an issue with me. We had named the baby the minute we knew it was a girl, and she kind of named herself, her name just kind of her, so we named her Louise. And every single appointment we went into, we'd say her name's Louise, we've named her Louise. And for the entire pregnancy, so it was like basically half the rest of the pregnancy, she was never called a baby, or never called, definitely never called Louise. And in fact, it wasn't until we went to the children's hospital, which was before the baby was born, we were all the preparation. The first thing they said in the children's hospital was, have you named the baby? And we said Louise. And ever after that, then she was never.
So do you feel
Louise
that the maternity carers that you were dealing with prior to arriving in Crumlin had written you off somewhat, or had written Louise off?
Well, we felt that we were, we definitely felt that we were treated very unkindly. Now, I don't know the motive, and I'm not really interested in the motive, you know, of why. But, for example, every time we were given hope by the doctors that we're going to be caring for Louise, when we came back, and, you know, we'd be on a high and say, we can do this, we can do the surgery, and she can do this, that, and she has a chance. The doctor would just say, well, you know, this is a very major anomaly, and that our cardiologist had said that she may be looking at a transplant down the line. Now, she might not, but he told us that she might be looking at it. And the doctor just said to me, well, you know, hearts are very hard to come by, and she wouldn't be considered for a heart. You know, so that's a kind of...
Do you think
kind
that
of
the medics were trying to manage your expectations, or you felt it went beyond that?
No, I think we said very clearly, look, we're ready for disability.
We're going ahead with
we're
this
going
no matter
to go
what,
for it, and we'll care for it. We'll see it through, like, you know.
Yeah.
So
and how is Louise?
Well, actually, when she was born, she was transferred over to the Children's Hospital, and she's had three big heart operations. But that's her hopefully finished now.
Really?
Yeah. So in fact, actually, the last surgery, the surgeon told us, he said, now I think she should have a good long life. And in fact, my husband said, oh, what if she ever gets pregnant? And he said, well, we'll see her through. You know, so because basically only half her heart is really working, you know, so they've rerouted.
So she is living with problems. Did her brain develop okay?
She actually since has been diagnosed with a really rare condition called FACE syndrome, which is it's very rare, but she has no developmental issue whatsoever, none.
Right.
Well, she will need monitoring, but that's all she'll need, really, hopefully.
And I suppose in the wider story here, Jennifer, you felt yourself you were not given the care that you wanted. You made the decision that you made. You were not told that it was a fatal fetal abnormality. Do you accept for those who are told it's a fatal fetal abnormality that, you know, maybe they should have the right to continue determination here in Ireland, that it is a difficult choice?
The first day that we got we were told it probably was a fatal abnormality. Now, and then subsequently, we didn't know whether it would be fatal or not until after she was born, you know, or how disabled she'd be. She could have been profoundly disabled, you know. So,
But for those with a diagnosis like anencephaly, where the brainstem is not there, would you accept, you know, no possibility of life outside the
uterus? All I can talk about is my own mindset. The day we were going home that day, I said to my husband, I hope the baby dies quickly. Now, we weren't going to go to England, but I wanted the baby to die quickly because it would be a miscarriage. And I'd had miscarriages before, and this was a good bit later, but I knew I'd lived through it before. And even though, you know, it ripped my heart out, I just wanted to get the bereavement started and the grief and get on. But the next day I said, you know what, I actually want her to get to 24 weeks. Now, I could be wrong, but I think it's 24 weeks that you get a birth cert. And I had this whole focus on the birth cert. And then about another day later, I said, oh, no, I want her to be born. And if she lives for a minute or a day or an hour, I want to be the one that sees her through. And if I can get to kiss her, I'll be honoured. So it actually took that kind of few days of process to come to the thing that says, I want to hold this baby. And if she dies in my arms, I am be honoured to be the one.
That was choice.
Yeah. But if we had made the decision that day to go to England, we would have been into packing bags, making appointments, finding babysitters. We'd have been on a route. And we wouldn't have come. I wouldn't have been able to have the kind of thought process that actually led me to say, no, if the baby dies in my arms. At this stage, we still thought she might die. And we didn't know during the whole pregnancy whether she'd die or not. I said, no, I want to hold her, and I want, you know, I want to my husband to have a chance to see her, and hopefully the children might get to see her. So okay. it was definitely a process.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing with us. It's clearly an area that needs to be more thoroughly thought out, I think, by everyone involved.
Can I just say just a little plug for our organisation, One Day More, that if anybody does get a diagnosis, if you check out our website, One Day More, we have support there and we have other mothers. Now, we're not professional counsellors. We are just people that have gone through it that we're willing to talk to, meet or whatever.
Well, Jennifer, thank you very much indeed for coming in to us this morning.